Hello, everyone. Thank you for tuning into the Talking Information Center. Today is Wednesday, August the 19th, 2026. I'm Jay, and I'll be reading to you from the Providence Journal. Our first story, Rhode Island Seeks to Reduce Student Absences, by Colin Hogan of the Providence Journal. Rhode Island has set an ambitious new goal for itself to dramatically reduce the chronic absenteeism in schools to below 10% over the next 4 years. For context, the 2021-22 school year, more than 34% of public school students in Rhode Island missed 18 or more days of school, the threshold for becoming chronically absent over 1 year of school. And last year, 19.7% of students in Rhode Island were chronically absent. That's an improvement of 14 percentage points since 5 years ago, which Governor Dan McGee said was the fifth largest improvement of any state in the nation. Now, state leaders want the chronic absenteeism rate to fall by almost half again. The new target date hopes to reach 10% statewide chronic absenteeism before the end of the 2029-30 school year. Why it matters, missing significant amounts of school may make students more likely to drop out, perform worse in school, and even experience adverse health outcomes. Angelica Infante Green, commissioner of the Rhode Island Department of Education, announced the new goal at the State House on August 17th as part of this school year's kickoff of Governor Dan McGee's Attendance Matters Rhode Island campaign focused on getting kids back to school after the increased absenteeism in the wake of the coronavirus pandemic. Infante Green said she was confident in the new goal because Rhode Island schools had exceeded their previous goal. Among all districts, Providence School public schools saw its rate of chronic absenteeism decrease the most. It fell from 25% last year after reaching a high of 57% in 2022. The superintendent of the Providence District, Javier Montanez, who was first appointed to the interim role in 2021 during the state control period, said that he and Commissioner Infante Green had personally called the families of absent students during the district's push for better attendance. Attendance Matters Rhode Island program also included partnerships with local businesses to create attendance incentives. Infante Green also touted the data dashboard and the school leadership leaderboards that made absenteeism rates visible to parents, teachers, and communities. To continue on the progress made, Infante Green said, the Department of Education is piloting new attendance platforms. Within 3 years, every student in Rhode Island will have access to a new standardized attendance platform at no cost, Infante Green said. Schools will also adopt uniform definitions that improve data tracking. Previously, schools may have set their own definition for absences. Moving forward, a student must be in school for more than 50% of the day to be counted as present, a move that will standardize expectations across the state, Infante Green said. State leaders celebrated students and families at the State House, including three students from the Pawtucket School District who won a video contest to promote better attendance. Fedora Akauda, Nora Greenman, and Cassandra Chen Gomez of Goff Middle School won a statewide video contest earlier this year, but they only learned about the August 17th event at the State House 1 day before, on August 16th. Less than 24 hours after receiving their invitations, the students were shaking hands with Governor McGee. Akauda, 14, played the role of a student who struggled to prioritize getting to school in the winning video. In real life, the attendance event almost cramped her work attendance. She had to rush off her shift at McDonald's directly after the event. She said. The three Goff Middle School students said they got involved with the video contest after their history teacher, Eric Asselin, encouraged them. Students from the Lawn Avenue School in Jamestown and Rhode Island Nurses Institute in Middle College in Providence were also honored for their video submissions. Next, new Rhode Island flock cameras may be paused for 60-day review. by Jack Perry, Providence Journal. Installation of new automated license plate reader, ALPR, cameras in Rhode Island may be paused and a 60-day review will be conducted to establish standards on the use of the cameras and the data they collect. Governor Dan McGee called for the pause and issued a review order after privacy concerns were raised about the so-called flock cameras and questions about controls over data gathered by the cameras. And the sharing of that information became a hot topic in Rhode Island and elsewhere in recent weeks. Automated license plate readers can be an important tool for law enforcement to solve crimes, recover stolen vehicles, and locate dangerous or missing individuals. But Rhode Islanders also have legitimate questions about privacy, transparency, and how this information is collected, stored, and shared, said McGee in a public statement. Public safety and personal privacy are not mutually exclusive. Rhode Island needs clear and consistent rules of the road for this technology, McGee said. We are taking action now to pause further expansion to examine how these systems are being used across the state and put in strong, uniform safeguards in place to protect both public safety and personal privacy. McGee said he has directed Rhode Island State Police Colonel Darnell Weaver, Director of Rhode Island Department of Public Safety, to work with appropriate stakeholders to review ALPR technology and provide recommendations for statewide standard and controls of the on the use of ALPR cameras and the data they produce. McGee said Weaver would conduct the review in consultation with the Rhode Island Police Chiefs Association, the Rhode Island League of Cities, and towns and other appropriate stakeholders. McGee expects the review to be completed within 60 days, and when it's done, McGee said he will work with lawmakers on legislation that codifies these protections and establishes clear, consistent standards for ALPR use statewide. During the review, the state police will continue using their existing cameras, but won't install or activate new cameras, according to McGee. Rhode Island needs clear and consistent rules for the road for this technology, says Governor Dan McGee. Next story. Hunger pangs. Inflation is making healthy eating a luxury for many. By Johnny Williams, Providence Journal. Make rent or eat healthy. That's the choice many Rhode Islanders are having to make lately as a perfect storm of inflation, supply shortages, and federal food aid cuts is buffeting them, forcing them to decide between eating nutritious food and making ends meet. No matter how you slice it, food insecurity, the inability to reliably access nutritious food, is a growing reality for many Rhode Islanders. Between 2020 and 2024, the number of Rhode Island households reporting food insecurity more than doubled from 16% to 38%, according to most recently available data from the Rhode Island Life Index, a survey conducted by Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Rhode Island and Brown University's School of Public Health. Melissa Cherney, CEO of Rhode Island Community Food Bank, sees the number of people needing food assistance in the state swell. Last November, the food bank served more than 102,000 people, nearly 1 in 10 Rhode Islanders, a record high in the organization. While the number of people seeking assistance from the food bank's network of pantries has slightly decreased since then, Cherney has noticed a change in frequency. Food pantries were really set up to be emergency help where people would only come a couple of times a year. Now we're seeing them month after month. They have deeper needs, more persistent needs, Cherney said. Cherney hesitated to use the word, but she said pantries are having to ration supplies to meet the surge in demand. Food policy advocates and analysts attribute much of the rise in demand for food assistance to federal cuts to programs such as Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program and the imposition of work requirements to access food assistance, On June 1st alone, 5,000 more Rhode Islanders lost access to their SNAP benefits, according to the Economic Progress Institute. Another reason, often understated, keeping people from accessing food assistance from food pantries is fear of immigration enforcement, said Allison Tovar, an associate professor of behavioral and social sciences at Brown University. But unrelenting food inflation, driven by global conflicts, skyrocketing prices of oil, and supply and demand forces, has a compounding effect. The price of food to be consumed at home in the Northeast has risen by more than 23% since 2020, according to the Consumer Price Index. The price of fruits and vegetables rose by 7.2% last year alone. The actual change may hit consumers' wallets harder when they shop around a grocery store. The cost of the USDA's cheapest weekly food plan, a nutrient-dense menu of fruits, grains, vegetables, and other edible goods set by dietary guidelines for a family of four with two children has risen from $156.70 in May of 2020 to $235 in May of 2026, a nearly 50% increase. Inflation does not stop at the grocery store. Consumers are feeling it at the gas pump, at healthcare appointments, and when paying for housing and energy bills. The effect is a shrinking of economic freedom when people have to choose between paying bills and spending money on expensive groceries. It's almost like they're playing Jenga, Cherney said. Like, what can I do this month without making everything topple over? A companion survey to the Rhode Island Life Index of about 500 people conducted in 2025 found that about one in four Rhode Islanders had to choose between paying food bills such as paying for food or bills such as housing, utilities, and transportation. The food bank itself is also feeling the brunt of rising prices. About 60% of the food bank supplies came from donations, but that is nearly halved in recent years, while the share of food purchased has risen, according to Cherney. When we're having to purchase more food and it costs more, we're not getting the quantities we used to. We're not getting the variety that we used to, she said. Nutritious food is usually first on the chopping block, said Tovar. Produce and lean protein are the first thing to cut when money is really tight, Tovar said. More than one-fourth of Rhode Islanders bought fewer healthy foods and vegetables due to rising prices, according to the Rhode Island Life Index data. Half of those surveyed said higher prices have resulted in them altogether buying less food. It's not that they don't want to buy those foods. It's just that they're really expensive right now, Tovar said. For families with young children who may not have developed a palate for healthier food choices, buying pricey produce can feel like a splurge. If you try introducing broccoli multiple times over time, they might learn to like it. But, of course, when you put that in the context of food insecurity, it's very different. Parents are like, I'm not going to waste food. I can barely make ends meet, Tovar said. There are some ways people can still access nutritious food, even in the face of inflation and cuts to government assistance, said Maya Vadelvu, an associate professor in the Department of Nutrition at the University of Rhode Island. There are some practical steps people can take to save money and eat healthy foods. Buying freeze-dried vegetables and fruit, which are still packed with nutrients, is one, said Vadelvu. Opting for dried beans, a plant source of protein, instead of canned beans, is another. And there is, of course, bulk shopping. If you have the storage space, using coupons and taking advantage of incentive programs such as Eat Well, Be Well, which gives SNAP users 50 cents back for every dollar spent on produce. Some of it may come down to recalibrating what someone considers to be healthy eating. In many cultures, meat is considered a nutritious choice, while cheaper plant-based protein alternatives may offer similar benefits. You can absolutely have a healthy diet that's affordable, but it does require some planning and budgeting and really sort of making sure that what you considered healthy is more in alignment with the sort of plant sources which tend to be also more affordable, Vadivelu said. In top headlines, the best Greek restaurant in Rhode Island is hidden inside a Middletown Inn. By Rin Velasco, USA Today Network, New England. A food website just named the best Greek restaurant in Rhode Island is selecting the breakfast part of the Bed and Breakfast Inn in Middletown. Love Food made a list of the best Greek restaurants in the United States, with one restaurant per state, and named a Middletown restaurant as the best in the Ocean State. America has first-rate Greek restaurants from coast to coast, and many have been running for generations, Love Food said. Here, we reveal the top spots to get your Greek food fix in every state, from snug tavernas to retro diners. Here's what you need to know about Yaya's Cafe next to Sunbreeze Inn in Middletown, Rhode Island. Yaya's Cafe, Yaya means grandma in Greek, was named the best Greek restaurant for both food and view. Food Love said, part of boutique hotel The Seabreeze Inn, bright and airy joint, Yaya's serves Greek specialties alongside a classic breakfast and lunch menu. Top picks include the pricey, the juicy Greek salad, topped with a hunk of feta, the house-made meatballs, served with lemon potatoes and tzatziki, the souvlaki plate, and the delicious breakfast pastries. Yaya's also serves other Greek classics, including spanakopita, dolma, known as stuffed grape leaves, lamb chops served with lemon potatoes, known as paidakia. They also have three different types of pelikia, or assorted plates, one with cheese, one with meat, and one with vegetables, according to their menu. You can find Yaya's Cafe at 147 Aquidneck Ave in Middletown, Rhode Island. They are open from 7 a.m. to 3 p.m. every day of the week. Continuing with top stories, $10 coffee gains popularity in Rhode Island even as budgets tighten. People may complain about how much they are paying for their coffee, especially espresso-based and other specialty drinks like nitro and cold brews, but they keep on bellying up to the baristas to place their orders. What if that cup of coffee costs $10? Is there any price that will hurt America's coffee culture? The answer seems to be no, according to local coffee shop owners and specialty roasters. People are stretching their dollars to pay for affordability luxury, said Brian Gibb, who runs Providence's Bolt Coffee Company with two cafes and a roastery. For under $10, you get a hand-cranked drink, have a nice chat with a barista, and sit in a nice cafe. At his Borealis Coffee Company cafes in East Providence and Bristol, owner Brian Wiggins offers a pour-over cup coffee that costs $8 for a hot cup and $9 for iced. Add tax, and you are at the $10 mark. The manual brewing process takes time and labor, and the coffees are unique. I have an $18 cup of pour-over coffee, and people are glad to pay it, said Michael Levesque, owner of Pawtucket's Descent Cafe, where he showcases single estate coffee. People want the tasting experience, he said. That $8 coffee is made with award-winning beans. He also pour-overs for one-third the cost. Why spend so much when you can brew a cup of coffee at home for comparative pennies? Borealis' Wiggins, who also has a roastery in Pawtucket, offers a popular explanation. He frames it by referring back to his pre-cafe days when he worked in filmmaking in the Boston area. I'd be sitting in traffic, crawling to the Braintree Split, but thinking, at least I'm enjoying my coffee, and everything washes away. A draw of a cup of coffee as a daily ritual for many, he said. It's a gift a coffee lover can give themselves. Tied into that is the concept that customizing has pushed the cost of a cup of coffee, said Dave Lanning, owner of Dave's Coffee, which has a roastery and shops in Charlestown and Providence. Everyone likes building their own drink, and all the components add up to the cost of the drink, he said. People order extra shots, flavored syrups, and cold foam on top. each of which comes with a cost. It's especially true when his younger customers, who fuel the business, his business in Providence, locations at 341 South Main Street. People are willing to spend a little more for a treat that is just for them, Lanning said. That's why offering an experience and a visually appealing drink matters, he said. Younger customers especially like to engage with baristas who know their name and their drink, he said. Starting your day with a moment of connection is what makes the coffee ritual so strong, said Wiggins. He opens at 6 a.m. because he serves a community of teachers in Riverside in the town of Bristol. Going into your shop is usually the first and only place you stop in the morning on the way to work, he said. It's when people take 10 minutes for themselves. At the end of the day, people will pay for what they find value in, said Gibb. It's not just the extraction, but the connection, he said. So many meaningful moments happen over coffee. There are other explanations why there's no rush to hysteria over coffee prices. Many people would rather feel good knowing Central and South American and other international farmers are making a living wage producing the beans that Americans adore than save a buck or two. It's a big responsibility that we're making sure people are getting paid properly, said Gibb, whose Bolt Cafes are on Washington Street and the RISD Museum. Gibb said he thinks most operators think a lot about the cost of a cup of coffee. The emergence of specialty coffee has shed light on the position coffee holds and how it gets here. It's both interesting and rewarding to see how the supply chain works, but it also poses more questions, he said. The bottom line for Gibb is to bring in coffee that supports ethical practices. At Descent, Levesque feels the same way, talking about coffee with commitment. The prices of every ingredient used to make coffee went up during COVID and its aftermath. None of them came down, said Lanning from Dave's. It's become the new normal now, he said. He's seen you can raise your prices, but you can't alienate your customers. At the same time, you need to make enough money to run the business. Last year, Wiggins said his margins were terrible at Borealis due to a variety of issues, including tariffs. He raised prices in April for the first time in 2 years. Why? Cold brew requires more coffee to make it per ounce. Flash brewed iced coffee uses pricier single origin coffee. Pour overs require time and labor. Oat milk costs three times what whole milk costs, but the upcharge for it is minimal. At Pawtucket's Descent, Levesque is holding the line on latte cost not by charging for an alternative milk choices. That hurts his bottom line, because only 30% of his customers want the less expensive whole milk lattes. But his line of coffees that have won international awards brings in coffee geeks like himself who will travel for special beans. At Bolt, Gibb notes the check must cover more than the cost of that drink. It covers rent, labor, health, and the 401k benefits. It's important to hold the line on cost, said Maggie Malvina Pearson, who recently opened her Adelia coffee shop at 74 Maple in Barrington to showcase Portuguese products and flavors as well as coffee. The higher the price, the higher the expectation, she said. It better be the best coffee you ever had in your life, she said. Rhode Island's coffee culture mirrors what's happening nationally. Since last year, specialty coffee consumption has surpassed traditional coffee in studies that ask what consumers drank the week before. During the five-year trend, our younger consumers, ages 25 to 39, according to the National Coffee Association, the trade group's 2026 specialty coffee report noted that 58% of Americans said they drank a specialty coffee in the past week. Traditional drip coffee is more likely to be consumed by older age groups, such as those 60 plus, but still 40% of that group chose a specialty coffee. The youngest, 18 to 24 year olds, consume the least, but are more likely to drink specialty coffee, 50%, over traditional, 40%. Continuing with trending stories, Bally's, operator of two Rhode Island's two state casinos, is in trouble as stock prices tumble. by Wheeler Cowperwaith of the Providence Journal. Bally's Corporation, the operator of Rhode Island's two state-run casinos, warned investors this week that it could stop operating, as there is substantial doubt about the company's ability to maintain its credit line based on problems with liquidity. The report sent the company's stock tumbling toward the lowest level in over a year. The concern was reported in the company's quarterly earnings report. Put simply, Bally's has been receiving waivers from its debtors based on a minimum liquidity maintenance requirement, but based on current forecasts, Bally's doesn't project it will satisfy those requirements. As described below, when the company is actively engaged in discussions on several financial alternatives, the conditions and events raise substantial doubt about the company's ability to continue as a going concern, according to the report. In an email, Bally's spokeswoman, Laura Westerfield, wrote that the going concern reflects a forward-looking technical accounting analysis, and that the context, that's the context it should be read in. The analysis does not take into account anticipated future funding until the definitive agreements have been executed, she wrote. Bally's Corporation continues to be below Rhode Island's legislatively mandated ratio and is committed to maintaining that requirement. The company also has assets it can use to meet future obligations, she wrote. Governor Dan McGee spoke with Bally's leadership on August 18th, and officials assured him that they are working deliberately to address liquidity concerns and are implementing plans to complete ongoing projects, McGee spokeswoman Olivia DeRocha said, wrote in an email. They also confirmed that there were no projected impact on Bally's Rhode Island facilities, DeRocha said. We have strong working relationship with Bally's and continue to stay in close communication. State Department of Revenue spokesman Paul Grimaldi wrote in an email that officials are in regular contact with Bally's leadership. They have appraised us of the latest development and we are monitoring the situation, he wrote. As of May, the state brought in $376.5 million for the year from the lottery category, which includes gaming proceeds. And that looks like about all we have time for in the Providence Journal today, Wednesday, August the 19th, 2026. I'm Jay, and thank you for listening to the Talking Information Center today.